When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I am your host, Andy Mitz. And man, we are going to have a party today because Kansas, this last weekend, upset Oklahoma 38-33. Look, I picked it in my predictions, but I thought it was going to be a close game. It ended up being a close game thanks to the weather. Here to help me recap slash celebrate slash whatever else it is we decide to do today is my deputy editor over at Blue Wings Rising, Kyle Davis. Kyle, how are you doing today?
The weather is miserable, but I am in a good mood. It's still raining. This is 22 hours later than after the game. And it's still the same exact conditions, but you know what? You can't dampen the spirits. It literally, as we started this, Kansas is back in the top 25, checking in at number 22. So, you know what? Life's pretty good right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this game was good enough that Iowa State, they finally announced the time for that one. That's going to be a prime time on ESPN game at 6 p.m. So I am planning on being up in the stadium for that one as well. So should be a lot of fun to go on hand, and hopefully Kansas can get some revenge for that game. But we've got plenty to talk about with Oklahoma before we look ahead to Iowa State. This was a game that I thought, you know, coming in, like the real question was, one, is Oklahoma's defense as good as their numbers seem to suggest? And two, could the Kansas defense do enough to slow down a Dylan Gabriel-led Oklahoma team that they don't really have a running back that puts up big eye-popping numbers, but as everybody was quick to remind us during all of Fox Big Noon Kickoff and ESPN College Game Day, Oklahoma runs the RPO in such a way that the main runner is the quarterback, not the running back. So lots of stuff there, but which one do you think was a bigger deal here, the way the Kansas defense played or the way that that Kansas was able to score against Oklahoma's defense?
I think it has to be the defense, right? And we'll get to the offense. And Oklahoma was one of those teams, and we'll get to this later, but they always gave up a lot of yards, especially in Big 12 play. The turnover differential was key for them, and the weather kind of negated that a bit. But we'll get to that later, because I think we have to start with the defense, because 2 weeks ago, you and I sat here after a dismal performance against Oklahoma State, saying, I don't know what it is, but this defense feels like it just has so much more energy at home and being able to start out strong, and whatever reason on the road, we do it. And so I, you know, have been very optimistic this year, but on my prediction, I picked Oklahoma to narrowly win in the shootout because I needed the defense to show that they could stop somebody after that Oklahoma State performance. And I do think there is a difference there. And you saw it, the Mello Dotson interception immediately got the crowd involved. So you were nice and toasty and dry up in the press box. I was down in the stands getting soaked with my family. And that completely changed the stadium was I would say pretty good at kickoff, but like that got people in it. That was huge. And then if you look at it, I know there's plenty of deficiencies with the run defense still that we need to talk about. But the big thing was Oklahoma was 2 of 10 on third down. And Dylan Gabriel is an extremely efficient quarterback. And even with the rain, which I know is a factor, Like, he is just very good at finding his spots, dinking and dunking if he needs to, and letting his receivers kind of make plays in space. And that was the big thing. That was, Kansas was able to get off the field on third down. Dillon Gabriel was still 14-19, but on some of those big plays, that pick six was on the third and two. There was a couple others there that even then Oklahoma went for it on fourth down. The pass defense, there was just an aggressiveness, and you know, I know the weather was a factor, but even then it just felt like a different level than we saw against Oklahoma State. And one of the big things I talked about in the preview that was just different with this year's Oklahoma team, not to diminish them by any point, but Dillon Gabriel's the star. They don't have that. Like, last year they had Marvin Mims, who's now in the NFL, who was that 1,000-yard receiver who's just a stud. They don't really have that. You know, Drake Stoops is one of the leading receivers this year, and he made a couple of nice plays, but there's just not that one-on-one, throw it up 50-50 ball and let your guy go get it receiver on here. And I thought that credit to the secondary for Kansas. They came with energy. They were making big hits. They were wrapping up, because that was another thing in the Cowboys game 2 weeks ago in Stillwater. So many missed tackles in space that just, you know, what would have been maybe a 4 or 5 yard gain turns into a 12 yard gain because you can't wrap up. That definitely wasn't the case. And overall, yeah, I think you have to credit the defense for what it was able to do to just make things difficult for Oklahoma as a starting point, because again, we, at least at home, we've seen it and they proved it again, but this was a much bigger test than, say, a UCF or a BYU.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things that rain does, right? I think it benefits the offense on rushing, and it benefits the defense in passing, mainly because, you know, as a runner, unless you're like actually slipping on the field, a runner is able to make better cuts, knows exactly where they're going, whereas the defense is trying to react. It's a lot harder to react to something, you know, in the rain. And I think you saw that with Oklahoma getting 269 yards rushing. I mean, Kansas got 225 of their own, but, you know, this is one of the few weeks that Taiwi Walker, I believe is how you say his name. Yeah. Sorry, I've been stumbling all over that. But Walker was able to get 146 yards and just one touchdown. You know, it took him 23 runs to do it. But I mean, this is a team, I think, that a lot of that, I think, had to do with Kansas selling out so much to stop Dillon Gabriel, to keep him from getting huge rushes. And he got a couple. Dillon Gabriel is that kind of player. He's going to. He ended up with 3 rushing touchdowns as well. But I think Kansas did a really good job of being extremely aggressive and getting in the backfield and blowing up a lot of those runs. There were definitely times where Oklahoma was able to get them and kind of do what they wanted to do in some cases, but there was way too many times, you know, if you're an Oklahoma fan, Kansas was in the backfield or was hitting guys like at the line of scrimmage way too many times and were slowing down what Oklahoma wanted to do. There were still a decent amount of missed tackles, but unlike against Oklahoma State where, you know, it was a missed tackle and the guy was gone, it was, if you missed the tackle, they at least slowed him down enough that the next guy was right there ready to get him, ready to wrap him up, ready to pull him down. But I think the biggest example of how much tougher they were, and I asked Marvin Grant about this after the game, Tommy Dunn Jr. had one where literally Dillon Gabriel was running by him. He reached his hand out, grabbed him across the shoulder, and just flung him down on the field. That is a tackle that normally would be a missed tackle. Dillon Gabriel would pick up another 30 yards. And, you know, Oklahoma would have had a ton of momentum. I believe that was on a third down as well. So, it really stopped the momentum. It showed just how much more physically Kansas' defense was playing. And, of course, yes, the pick six was awesome. I believe, let's see, how many other turnovers did they have?
A lot of special teams turnovers in this game.
That's true.
For sure, yeah.
Well,
A lot of muffed catches on kickoffs and punts.
Right. I mean, so Kansas muffed the one kickoff. And then Oklahoma immediately turned that into 7 points. But, you know, let's actually talk about that one next, because we actually asked Leipold about this after the game. It was in the second half as Kansas was trying to make that, or Kansas had just pulled within one and then failed the 2-point conversion. I believe this was for the first time. They kicked it, skied it up there. And, you know, it went to a player that wasn't used to it and he ended up fumbling it and Kansas recovered. You know, that was something that they had done it earlier in the game. And I don't think anybody really noticed at that point because it was just, you know, it was no big deal. But I think the way that they decided to play this game had a huge impact. Special teams had a big impact as well. And of course, the missed field goals, not that great for the Jayhawks. But I think that they had a very good game plan coming in here, and I think the coaches definitely had them prepared to take an Oklahoma team that at that point had been killing everybody except for Texas, you know, well, and then UCF last week, but it had been killing everybody for a good portion of the year and really just made it a muddied up game.
And you touched on it. I think the bye week really helped with the defensive line health because they were real banged up coming out of Stillwater. And I think that's what you saw is that front seven just looked much more aggressive, quick, strong. Like, Hayden Hatcher got in there, made a play. Like, he had been really, really banged up. So that was a big one. And you think about it, Dylan Gabriel coming into this game had a 19-3 touchdown interception ratio. Now he's at 19-4. So yes, he had three rushing touchdowns. He had five rushing touchdowns on the year before this. He's a running quarterback. He can do that. But you give a guy who, you know, is already basically that would have been seven games before that, you know, he's averaging almost three touchdowns a game through the air and, you know, obviously less than one pick, and you get zero passing touchdowns in a pick. That's a huge win for the secondary. And you're right. Then, you know, Oklahoma's just that scheme. And because Gabriel is such a good runner and you can run those read options and the zones and whatnot, like, it's, you're going to give up some yards and bully out. But yeah, that was, I think that bye week did the defense a lot of good, not only for Brian Borland, did, you know, credit to the coaching staff on the scheme and the game plan and being able to slow it down, but also that front seven just looked healthier than what we've seen since early on in the year, maybe the Illinois game, maybe the BYU game.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think the big difference here, right, it's like normally you were seeing plenty of instances where, you know, Kansas was having big plays in the backfield, so lots of sacks, lots of tackle for losses, but then also giving up huge plays. Whereas this game plan and the way that this ended up working out was Kansas only had four tackles for loss. You know, they had one sack from Austin Booker in the first quarter, and then they had, you know, Cornell Wheeler had two tackles for loss, and Jeremy Robinson had one. So there wasn't a lot there, but there was a lot of plays that were 1 to 2 yard pickups, you know, guys on the, oh, you're running on the ground and not picking up very much. Kansas just seemed to, for whatever reason, be able to anticipate fairly well what Oklahoma was doing and be able to, at that point, you know, get enough guys in there around the ball that they could go ahead and stop them. I mean, defensively, I don't know that there's that much more to talk about just because, I mean, it was a solid thing, you know, a solid game all year around, or all from start to finish, it was fairly solid. Yes, Oklahoma got their points, but again, this is an offense that gets a lot of points, has probably as much misdirection as the Jayhawks do. With just a few less players. And so I'm not necessarily that surprised. Obviously, I think there's still concerns about, like, the way the rushing defense, but if you think about the weather, both teams were going to run heavily anyway. So, like, I'm not necessarily that concerned about it. And the fact that they had so many, you know, they limited so many plays. The longest play on the day for Oklahoma was a 39-yard pass, but a 28-yard rush from Tyree Walker. You know, you have one of those, that's fine. And really, they only had like two, I think they only had three total plays that were over 20 yards on the day, which is a huge improvement for this team.
And I think Kansas had 11 on offense, and I might be mistaken on that, but I think I saw that somewhere of 20 plus explosive, what they would call quote unquote explosive plays on there. So yeah, that because you know that the Kansas offense is going to do that. Again, this is what we've talked about. The defense just needs to be average or slightly above average and get stops. Don't give up 40 points. Don't give up 600 yards. Create some turnovers. And again, that's how Oklahoma has won all year, because in the preview, we talked about this. Oklahoma is going to give up yards on defense. Their big thing is that they had turned teams over 15 times coming into the game, and they had only turned it over 5 times. That was going to be the big thing. You had to take care of the ball. Now, Jason Bean had some interceptions. We had the fumbles, but the defense got in there and at least made it more even. Cause the thing you couldn't have is that you couldn't have Oklahoma win the turnover battle, you know, 4-1 or something like that, where it's just Kansas coughing it up all over the place and Oklahoma's taking care of the ball and getting those extra possessions. And like I said, on the special teams, the weather kind of made that an even playing field, but that was what you needed. You needed to keep the big plays, force some mistakes from Oklahoma when you're on defense, and just trust your offense to go out there and be the explosive team that it's been all year long.
Yeah, I mean, and they did that really well. Talking about that rain delay, because, you know, Kansas was up 14-0 pretty quickly. Oklahoma made one drive to come back, and then they were looking like they were on another really good drive, and they go into that lightning delay. During that time, obviously, you know, it sounds like that's when you actually left the stadium, and a ton of people did. That's a completely different.
We made it through the degree.
Oh, you made it through the delay, but then left at halftime.
And then it was halftime. And then my 4-year old was like, you know what? I love pretzels. I love Big J, but I'm
too cold. I'm too tired.
And
wet, yeah.
And it's just like we live at that point. It's like an hour and a half of non football being played to then stick through. So yes.
That's kind of funny.
Ridiculous enough to make it through the entire.
No, that's ride, funny. Cause my kids went to the car during the delay and got back before halftime. But, yeah, I mean, the stadium really, really emptied out at that point, which is understandable given the weather and how cold it was and everything, and the fact it was like the first cold day like that of the season. But definitely, I think, had an effect. When they came back, Oklahoma just continued that drive as if nothing had happened. That lightning delay, though, like, were you worried at the time that it was going to give it an advantage to one of the teams, or was it kind of just... this really sucks and everybody's going to hate it.
Yeah, it did. Well, you know, you always feel like when you're the team who's up before that and you feel like you have the opponent on the ropes, on the road a little bit, anytime you can give them an hour to kind of regroup, that's a little nerve wracking. Because, you know, if anyone needs that more, it's the team who's currently trailing and on the road and kind of got hit in the mouth to start the game. So, when you go into it, you think, yes, this probably benefits Oklahoma. They have the ball right now. They're the one who need kind of a reset. They can look at what happened in that first quarter and the first half of that second quarter and then try and, you know, their coaching staff can try to make adjustments. It's just tough to, you know, you don't know how 18 to 22-year-olds are going to react like that. You know, I read afterward that the Jayhawks went back to the locker room. They were eating Uncrustables and they were focused and still locked in, and that's awesome. But, like, it's – in that situation, it more often gives the team who was struggling more and had more adversity against them time to level it out than it does the team who is on top continuing to make the momentum. Now, you can say Oklahoma's probably not as used to the weather and the cold and all that sort of thing, but I don't think it makes that much of a difference.
Well,
but I do think
that this one was different because Kansas was the one that was kind of on the ropes at that point. Oklahoma just had a long drive, and then Kansas got stopped pretty quickly, and Oklahoma was on another drive. Like, Oklahoma had seemed to grab back all the momentum at that point, and while, yes, they were still trailing on the scoreboard, Kansas was kind of back on their heels a little bit. So I think it gave them a chance to regroup. And even though when they got back, you know, Oklahoma was able to finish that drive and just march right down the field and score, and then the fumble happened, and Oklahoma took the lead at that point. Like, I definitely think that Kansas, you know, should have benefited from that more, but it didn't seem to affect Oklahoma at all. Whereas Kansas, I don't know that it was really affecting them that much, but all that extra rain made the ball harder to hold on to. So I don't know that it actually had an impact, but I know going into it, I think my expectation was that it was going to be helpful for the Jayhawks because they were going to be able to take a look at what Oklahoma was doing well and adjust a little bit better. Now, that being said, then going into halftime and coming out in the second half, you know, this is a second-half Kansas team. It has been all year long. I'm not really that surprised with the way that they were able to play in that second half. But let's finish up on the defense here. Was there anything else, any other player from the defense that really stood out to you or anyone that you think that we need to talk about that we haven't yet?
That's a good question because it you know, obviously there were some – like Kenny Logan kind of stands out, and there's a couple others. But this one felt like, again, it was a – this felt like a good, complete – team win where it wasn't just one guy out there making a bunch of plays where it was all over, you know. I know you know, Cornell Wheeler was getting in there in the backfield. I think he was one of them who maybe got one of those fumble recovers on special teams, so I know it wasn't a defensive play, but it felt like I think the front seven where you have, you know, Austin Booker was back and healthy, you had Marvin Grant getting in there, like you mentioned. There was that, I think it was, maybe was it Rich Miller who got in there on one of those hits that caused a fumble? Like, it was him and someone else.
Yeah, so Rich Miller kind of slowed him down and held him up and not, like, got under him so he was still up. And then J.B. Brown came in and just, like, smashed into him and knocked the ball out immediately. That was the one fumble that Kansas forced that they were able to then recover. And that was a huge momentum play for them. So, I mean, but I think, I think to your point, like, that's really what this was. This was a full team defensive performance. There wasn't a guy that, you know, like when Kobe Bryant.
It wasn't eye popping. Yeah. Right. It wasn't like, eye popping stats where someone had four sacks on their own or anything like
right,
that.
Right. Like, obviously, Romello Dotson's pick six was, you know, a great individual highlight. You have the J.B. Brown forced fumble, which is a great individual highlight. There was individual highlights here and there, but there wasn't like one guy that racked up four or five of them. And you're like, hey, that's the guy. Kenny Logan led the team in tackles at 10. Marvin Grant had 8. Like, it was interesting because your top four tacklers were linebackers or safeties, which is not necessarily something that's great to have, but it also, I think, just showed how well, how much they were in there and flying around and making those tackles. And the fact that Kansas was able to do, you know, what they were able to do and kind of hold Oklahoma the way that they did. So, all right, I do want to, well, no, I'm sorry. So, I mean, it was a phenomenal defensive performance all around. Just like all around, if you take a look at the sponsor we have here on the podcast, the Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company that is based right here in Kansas City. They want you to be the best-dressed fan this entire season. They have over 30 different schools with fantastic lines for all of them, including Kansas. And look, I'm not a K-State guy, but I have to admit that some of those designs are really good. And, you know, if they can make Kansas State stuff look good, then you know that they can look anything that you wear look good. If you go over to charliehustle.com, use promo code 101215, that's T-E-N-1215, then you can get 15% off of all non-sale items at the website. They have a ton of great stuff. Tons of Kansas stuff. I love the new Big 12 Conference Kansas City Skyline shirt. If you head on over, again, head on over there, 101215, save 15% on everything over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. All right, so I do want to jump over to the offense and kind of talk about the implications of this and everything. But before we do that, I need to throw to a quick break. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we're back. I am here with Kyle Davis. We are reviewing the Oklahoma win for the Kansas Jayhawks, 38-33. We talked about the defense to start, which I'm going to be honest, that's probably not where I would have started, but I'm glad we did because there was a lot of stuff that was definitely worth calling out there. But let's switch over to the offense because, yes, Jason Bean made a lot of mistakes in this game, but the way that he was able to lead that final drive, I want to start with that final drive. What was it you saw from him as he was able to kind of bounce back from those two huge backbreaking mistakes that, you know, wasn't able to bounce back against Oklahoma State with those. It looked like it might have been a similar sort of situation against Oklahoma, but on that huge 4th and 6, getting that gigantic pass down into the red zone. What did you see from Jason Bean, and just how impressed were you by his performance on the day?
You know, I think, yeah, we, you know, there's he wasn't perfect by any means, but I think that the hat tip you have to give to him is just the mentality you have to have as a quarterback to shake off the mistakes and some of those awareness plays, which, you know, like, I'm sure we'll get to it, like the slide in the end zone that was short, and just some of those where it's like you gotta know where you're at there. You know, that whole possession actually started with him scrambling for a first down, using his legs smartly. You're right. That play where he hit Lawrence Arnold, and then Arnold smartly turned over his left shoulder, got all the way down to the 10. It was the play before the Devin Neal run for the end zone. He was in the pocket. He was poised. He wasn't trying to, again, like we saw, some of his mistakes were him trying to roll right, which is interesting. That was what was happening in the Texas game and what was causing problems. And then we saw he had more success rolling left against Oklahoma State, but he stood in the pocket. First of all, I know we're talking about Jason Beam, but that kind of leads me into this was a redemption game for the offensive line. Yes, in terms of the rushing attack, but also in terms of giving Beam time, especially on those last couple possessions. You look at that play to Lawrence Arnold, and he has a comfortable couple feet on either side, and he's able to stay in the pocket, get his feet under him, and make a hard throw down the field. So credit to the team on that one. But that's one of those things where I will always give Jason Beam credit for wiping away his memory on the back one and just trying to make a play the next time. And that's what you have to do. It's much easier said than done. And in those big spots, it was a lot of third downs and fourth downs on those last couple of drives for him to give Kansas a chance and keep them into it. And you got to give him all. Yes, there's plenty of things I'm sure he would want back earlier in the game. You know, there's the overthrowing Trevor Cardell wide open in the end zone on second and goal from the 5. There's, you know, the slide. But yeah, on when it matters most, and it came down to the game on some of these third and fourth downs, he was poised. He credit to the offensive line, gave him time so that he didn't have to panic, but he stood in there and he made the plays that he needed to play. And that's what you need from a backup quarterback, and all credit to him. He did not let one mistake become 5 mistakes, become 10 mistakes to just completely get out of it. And that says a lot to when things are against you, hard to throw the ball when it's raining and cold and everything else. And he made a couple of darts, and he got a couple of first down with his legs when he needed to. And that's the mark of, you know, that's a winner, right? The mentality. And he's now in the top 10 passing all time at Kansas for his career. It's one of those games where it's a game with more than 70 total points, and neither quarterback threw for a touchdown, but he did what he needed to do. And I think that's the credit you have to give to him. And some of those throws, those were not easy throws. They were in tough situations. Oklahoma at the end was just, they were going to stack the box, and they were going to try and make him beat them with the outside. And he did. And there's a couple of throws to Fairchild in there where, you know, on that drive, after he scrambled for the first down, then he found Mason Fairchild on an out route, you know, up to midfield. And he was very poised there, and you got to give him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah. I mean, he only completed 47% of his pass on the day, which isn't a great stat, but in the weather like that, you're not necessarily that concerned about it. He was able to make some of those big, long passes. But to your point about the offensive line, I mean, you know, I look in the box score, and technically Oklahoma got credited with 5 QB hurries. I really only counted twice where his throw was actually affected by the pressure. There was once where he had to like roll out and throw it away because he was going to get sacked. And there was another time where the pass was a little bit off and kind of out of bounds because he was hit as he threw. Other than that, the offensive line really was able to do a really good job to keep him upright and make it so that he could make the decisions he needed to. Now, he didn't necessarily make the best decisions, you know, late in that game, before that final drive, but you know, that's also, I mean, Oklahoma is a good team. You know, it was a very similar situation to just the week before. I'm sorry, the game before. So I'm not necessarily that surprised. The fact that he was able to overcome it against a much better team, I think, in Oklahoma than Oklahoma State, I think really helped him and will help him moving forward. But, you know, Oklahoma only had 3 tackles for loss on the day. That was something that had been kind of their hallmark was, you know, tackling people behind this line of scrimmage and really clamping down in the red zone. And I thought they did a fairly good job clamping down in the red zone against the Jayhawks, but you know, Kansas, like I said, had several fairly large running. I'm sorry. Let's see. So yeah, so you actually had, I was a little bit surprised now I think about it, because Jason Bean's 38-yard touchdown run was the only offensive touchdown that happened from outside the red zone. And so, like, yeah, they definitely did a good job of clamping down for a portion of the game. But, you know, Daniel Hyshaw had he had a 9-yard touchdown run and a 1-yard touchdown run. And then Devin Neal had a 9-yard touchdown run. So, Kansas got into the red zone and actually scored off of it, which was good to see them do. There was a couple times where they were stopped, but I think for the most part, the offensive line gave them a good push. The running backs were making good cuts. And like you said, you just had guys that were able to pretty much do what they needed to do in big spots with, you know, a few exceptions.
Well, in Hyshaw for the first, especially in that first half and into that third quarter, like I remember at least two or three distinct plays where he probably should have only gotten 3 or 4 yards. And it was just him, his legs and him being stronger, just pushing guys up for another 3, 4, 5 yards. I mean, he just looked like he was miserable to tackle. And especially when it's cold and wet, like I'm sure he's even worse to tackle. And then you have Devin Neal going there. And yeah, this was a redemption game for the offensive line for sure, because I'm not sure what happened at Oklahoma State, but they just looked like they were out-physicaled and out-manned, and the running game just wasn't there. And that wasn't the case this time. They were getting great push. And again, this Oklahoma, again, they gave up a lot of yards, but coming into the game, they only gave up 16 points a game. Like they were, and they caused a lot of turnovers. They made teams just, they were kind of a bend, don't break. And so if you can put up almost 40 points on that defense, who is a top 20 defense, that's saying something. And the way that you do it when the weather's bad and the ball's slippery is you got to be able to run the ball. And Devin Neal and Daniel Hyshaw continue to be one of the best 1-2 combos in the country. And then when you have someone like Jason Bean who can then, you know, tuck it and run and make a big play with his legs, you know, he was second on the team in rushing right ahead of Hyshaw. But yeah, there were several times. Again, this feels like just all the way around, this was not a one person putting the team on their back. This was a very solid, complete team win, which is nice to see, because this was, you know, you can give a lot of people their flowers, I think, on the Kansas side after this game on both the offense and the defensive side of ball. I mean, Luke Grimm made some big plays. Fairchild got open a lot. Lawrence Arnold makes some big plays. The running game, this was not a one or two man show where it's just, hey, they had that guy, and on today we just couldn't do enough to stop him, which is what you want to see moving forward, because that means you're not easy to stop if you don't have that one guy. That's what makes this Kansas offense so difficult to stop, is because you go all out to stop Neal, and then you have Jason Bean scrambling, and then he's back and hitting, you know, one of his giant athletic tight ends and that sort of thing. So that this was one of those examples, I think, where it was just all around, just got to give them their flowers for the entire offense on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I also need to talk about the big plays. I think none of them bigger than, you know, even though yard-wise it wasn't bigger. The Quentin Skinner catch on the sideline, which was probably the weirdest play that I've seen in a really long time.
Near interception turn.
Yeah, it was a near interception that got bound, that got tapped up, and he was able to reestablish inbounds and catch that. And even though he went out of bounds on his own, because it was tipped, there are no penalties for anything like that at that point. So kudos to him for being able to get back in bounds. They reviewed it. I was surprised that they confirmed it, because I think there was enough question about whether that right foot was off the ground when he was able to catch it or not. But, you know, thought it was a great example of the athleticism and the ability that the Jayhawks had to kind of react to what was happening and find ways to get themselves to be able to stay in this game. But I don't think I've seen a pass crazier than that, except for maybe the sideline pass against TCU, the one time that that KU almost upset TCU at home, during the David Beatty era. So, it was a ridiculous play to see. And I think that was kind of the epitome of the effort all night long. It was them making big plays in very adverse conditions and finding ways to stay in a game that a lot of people didn't think, you know, that they really had any kind of opportunity to stay in. I mean, the College Game Day guys all picked Oklahoma, and from what I heard, it didn't sound like any of them even contemplated taking the Jayhawks. Whereas Matt Leinart on the Big Noon Kickoff show was the only one who took KU. Everyone else was like, oh, this might be difficult, but... And some of that might have been talking up the home team, you know, on the broadcast. But, you know, at least some of the other ones were willing to entertain it. But, yeah, Matt Leinart's the only one that picked it. He's now my new favorite morning host of any of these shows. So I'm all for that.
Whenever an entire set on a morning show picks the same team, you know that team's probably going to lose. That's the kiss of death. If everyone on, doesn't matter if it's, you know, basketball, football, if you're watching Sunday Night Football and all 12 of their pundits pick the same team to win, it's probably going to go the other way.
Well, I mean, usually, you know, the only time that happens is either it's a toss-up that everybody has talked themselves into, or it's a the expectation is that one of those teams is significantly better than the other. And I think that's what we ran into with Oklahoma versus Kansas, is that a lot of people thought that Oklahoma was a lot better and had not bought into the, hey, this Kansas team might actually be for real type of hype. So, but like you said, Kansas now ranked again. Let's see if they can hold on to it. They head up to Iowa State this next weekend. But before we preview that one really quickly, anything else about this Oklahoma game that really stood out?
That I think that maybe the next 6 days should be spent working on 2-point conversion attempts. That's one that stood out. If this game wouldn't have hit the over, there would have been a lot of upset people because Oklahoma couldn't do it either. So I thought that was wild. The special teams, it was going to be tough to just get anything done there anyway. And then you've got, you know, because of the field goals, you're trying to go for two, trying to make 5-7. And then the chess that had to happen because of that was interesting. But yeah, no, there's, and even so credit to the Kansas defense, there's a couple of those 2-point plays where Oklahoma tried to get a little cute and it was just completely sniffed out, but it wasn't anywhere close to getting converted. There was a couple of them where I think Bean probably should have hit Luke Grimm on that one where he's wide open. I think that was in the fourth quarter. That might've been the second to last 2-point attempt. And now they're all blurring together.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we work on some special plays and then also just converting. It was one of those things, you're right, it was weird. There's only one touchdown outside of the red zone, but also Kansas wasn't great inside like the five. I mean, there were so many opportunities to get in there and that helped. And also I think, you know, one other aspect of it that really helped is that you once again saw that Kansas was the more poised of the two teams. You know, Oklahoma gave Kansas 30 free yards on that one drive alone on two unnecessary roughness, personal foul penalties within 30 seconds of each other.
And the whole sideline, you know, unsportsmanlike conduct at the same time. So like Kansas got 45 free yards on that one drive.
It was ridiculous. Oklahoma had 11 penalties, 101 yards. Kansas had 55 on five penalties. So that was, again, another time where you just, in these situations, you can't beat yourself. And there were some times that you want back and there was some execution that wasn't quite there on the 2-point conversions and whatnot, but Oklahoma beat themselves more than Kansas did. And you got to give them credit for that.
Yeah. One other thing that kind of like, yeah, the only time that they were successful inside the five was when Jason Bean, not Jason Bean, Daniel Hyshaw after the Jason Bean slide, which by the way, I don't think that was intentionally a slide. It looked to me like he lost his footing trying to cut back. And then the minute he felt himself start to go down, he turned it into a slide to try to protect himself. Obviously, it didn't help, you know, protect him because, hey, guess what? He took a late hit.
Still got hit, yeah.
But the nice thing about that was he didn't go in. It was going to be fourth and goal from, like, the foot line. And instead, it became first and goal from the half-inch line. Like, it was literally as close as you could possibly get to actually being in the end zone without being there. So, you know, I'll give him a pass on that slide. I know a lot of people were really upset with it, but you go back and look at the replay and you saw his foot slip just a little bit and then he turned his body. Like if you're going to slide, you don't slide sideways. Like that's what really kind of sealed it for me is that his foot slipped sideways and he turned it into a slide and then got hit and was facing forward. So, but no, I mean, I think overall you made as good decisions as you could against a very difficult team. They're going to have that same thing coming up this week. So let's go ahead and take a look really quick at this Iowa State game. Iowa State obviously looks like a very different team now than they did at the beginning of the year. Rocco Beck seems to have finally kind of settled in and really been able to drive that offense. I think it does help that they've been playing a lot of teams recently that don't have great defenses, but this is a Kansas team that does not play defense as well on the road. So this is, something you might have to worry about a little bit. I am kind of curious, what are your initial thoughts looking at Iowa State?
Yeah, Jack Trice Stadium at night is is I'm sure Iowa State fans will be up for that one. And actually, it's interesting. I just saw preliminary lines, Iowa State -2 in this one. So do with that what you will when you listen to this. But this is one of those ones where, Iowa State has – look, they always have a good defense. So that's what you can count on. It's going to be – they're going to try and make it tough on you to score. And again, they're averaging giving up, you know, just less than 20 points a game. You're right. I think, Rocco, is the situation coming in is when your supposed and presumed starting quarterback is now not playing because of gambling issues and you're thrown into the fire. It's going to take a little bit. But I also – this Big 12 is just so weird. You know, like Iowa State loses by 30 to Oklahoma, gives up 50 points. And, again, that's on the road. But then you have – I don't know what to make of Baylor. So they, you know, nice win, 12-point win over Baylor yesterday. I don't know what to do with Baylor. Cincinnati's at the bottom. They're rebuilding. They, you know, new coach, new system, all that. So that was, you know, not a win that you are surprised by. And TCU, again, TCU is another one of those teams this year in the Big 12 in like the bottom half, where it's just like, I don't know what to do with them on any given week. I have no idea what to expect from like a Baylor or a TCU. And so credit to Iowa State for getting those wins, and they're doing it with defense. You know, neither of those three teams scored 20 points in that game. And so they're able to do that. But I just don't know. I'm interested to see what the offense can do. And again, Kansas is going to, you know, we saw that with Oklahoma. Oklahoma's defense can make the bad offensive teams look bad, right? And they can take advantage of that. Iowa State is similarly, you know, turning teams over a lot on defense, and they can make the bad offensive teams, or at least the undisciplined offensive teams, look bad. I'm curious what they do against KU here, because this is an offense that, again, they have not seen lately with Baylor or Cincinnati or TCU. And Oklahoma, when they played, you know, Oklahoma put up 50 on them, and that was the big thing where Iowa State's defense has been great at stopping the run, but Oklahoma had, you know, 157 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. So I'm just curious to see. I don't think it's an issue of, you know, the defense from Iowa State will probably make it tough for KU and Spurs, but I still can't see KU scoring less than 20 points in this game, honestly, even probably less than 24. So then the question is, can Kansas's defense on the road shake off whatever weird juju the thing this is, where they just have no motivation or energy or urgency, and stop an offense that has been good, fair, but, you know, they still are not world beaters by any means. And especially of what you saw last week, it's just not going to be the same. So it'll be a tough environment, and I guess this will be the thing is maybe Oklahoma State was just a blip. And I hate the whole, you know, we do this, oh, if only we would have beaten Oklahoma State, look at, you know, where we'd be now in the Big 12 and all that. I get that that's a natural thing you want to do, but also you don't know how that changes things. It might have been the loss at Oklahoma State that just lit a fire and woke the team up and got them to beat Oklahoma. You might have, if you would have won in Stillwater, maybe they are complacent going into the bye week and then they lose yesterday. You never know how that's going to be. So I'm wondering if maybe the Stillwater game, the bye week, and now this has kind of lit a fire under these guys. And that's the question. Can the defense, can the defense travel? Because we know what the defense looks like in Lawrence. Can the defense travel? Because I still think that the KU offense, even if it's Jason Bean, and we don't know, maybe Jalen Daniels comes back next week, I think they are good for at least still 24 points in this game. Can the defense hold Iowa State, who has been okay against the bad teams, not great offensively against the better teams? Can you stop them and hold them there? Because I don't know if Iowa State, they shouldn't be able to score more than 30 points on this Kansas defense. If they can, then there's something going on here.
Yeah, I mean, this is also a team that does not have really a running game. You know, they don't have a quarterback who's really good at running. Rocco Becht is not a runner. He has 77 yards on the season, averaging just 2.1 yards per carry. You know, they're averaging as a team 3.9 yards per carry on the year, which is not.
They like to run. They're
right. Right. This is a team that is, that likes to run, has been able to break off a few big ones, but for the most part, they're not a running team. Right. They're not that great at it. I mean, you look at the total number of, they have, as a team, they have basically 200 yards more than Devin Neal has on the season. That's how much they've struggled in the run game. That's where Kansas' weakness is, right, is in the rushing defense. So I think that this is a game where they have a good opportunity to go on the road and be able to put up some numbers and actually show that they are a good defense. They just, for whatever reason, play like, you know, crap on the road. But this is a team that I think that they can play well enough defensively to allow their offense to win them the game. And the question just is, becomes, are they going to? You know, Rocco Becht, he's, let me see, he's only averaging 7.2 yards per throw as well. So it's not like they're an explosive offense at all. They don't give up very many sacks. They've only given up 6 sacks on the year, 5 of them with Rocco Becht as the quarterback. So, you know, this is a team that probably is pretty good at keeping pressure from getting to them, but they don't necessarily take advantage of that. So we'll see how well their offense is able to play. I think this is a game where if both teams are held under 30, then I think that there's a good chance that that Iowa State pulls this one off. But if this becomes a shootout, Kansas is a much better team and can score a whole lot quicker. And Kansas is definitely favored in a game that goes over, you know, 65 total points. So I'm looking forward to this game. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Iowa State's defense is actually a lot like Oklahoma's too, which they are opportunistic. They've got 13 interceptions on the year so far. So that's part of it too. It's not a bunch of three and outs and punts. Like, they are turning teams over and giving themselves short fields to work
right.
with
it took,
to then
it
make
took,
it easier on the offense.
It took 2 interceptions against Oklahoma State for them to be able to win that game by a touchdown, where right. Iowa State did not turn the ball over at all. So, that is part of their game plan, is taking care of the ball and then forcing their opponents into turnovers, which, I mean, everybody wants to do that, but like, that's how they've been successful, is when that happens. So if you can disrupt one of those, either not turn the ball over yourself or force them to commit just as many turnovers as you did, as Kansas did to Oklahoma, then I think the Jayhawks are in a really good spot. So, all right. Anything else you think that we need to talk about before you get out of here for the day?
No, I think enjoy this. You're bowl eligible again. I think, you know, even if you got 4 games left, I think even 2-2 is like even kill. You say 8-4 in the year, which is actually what I predicted. And now after a couple of weeks, I was like, oh, is that too low? You're, even if that's the case and you go 2-2, which is, I know what fans don't want to have happen, you're 8-4. You're in a good bowl, like, I don't know, maybe the Alamo, something like that. You're in the hunt with the Big 12. Like, this is about all you can ask for. And I guess I don't think it can be understated, just the job and the turnaround that has happened, and just the fact that you can sit here, not even November, knowing you're going to a bowl game, you're ranked in the top 25 again. Like, it's just really incredible what has happened in a short amount of time.
Yeah. If you're a Kansas fan, you're hoping for absolute chaos and like 7 teams that are all, all have 2 losses at the end of the year. Cause then it gives you a chance to get into the championship game. Otherwise, you know, Kansas should be favored in every game after this one the rest of the way. Like, I know that Kansas State's a pretty good team and they seem to have settled in, but this is a Kansas team at home that should be favored over Kansas State.
K-State plays Oklahoma next week. So
right. K-State plays Oklahoma.
Going to have to take another loss.
No, K-State plays Texas, I thought.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Texas.
I was gonna say.
And then you're right. You're right. So, but then they still have, I believe.
They don't play Oklahoma the rest of the year. But I believe
you're right. They got Texas, yeah.
I believe they have Oklahoma State, though. I'm not 100% sure on that. No, they don't. They do. Oklahoma State has Houston and BYU after Oklahoma, whereas, let me see what Kansas State has. Hold on.
You're right, because the Big Noon kickoff next week is in Austin for K-State, Texas.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, man. I know some Oklahoma State fans that are going to be extremely upset about the fact that Bedlam did not get on either of the national television shows, but...
That's what it is. It's Bedlam this week, and then K-State.
Oh, that's right. K-State Texas. After that. So, okay.
So, you know, and then Iowa State's above you. So basically,
all
of the 4-1 teams are either playing each other or playing Kansas. So KU is 3-2 right now in the standings. You have every other. So there's 5 teams that are 4-1 right now. 4 of them are playing each other. The other one's playing Kansas. So if you win, you're automatically going to be in much closer territory, because there's already going to be, whether it's Texas or Oklahoma or K-State, somebody else is going to be in there with you.
Yeah, let's put it this way. Texas still has to play Iowa State and Kansas State. So, and you know, Kansas State plays Iowa State as well at the end of the year after KU. So as long, if KU wins out, they are going to be tied with somebody for that second place. And it's a matter of who is it and do they make the tiebreakers? That's a huge far cry from where, you know, the expectations were when Lance Leipold came in. So the fact that you're contending for a conference championship and you've been in and out of the rankings, you know, as a not undefeated team, like that's, I think, the biggest deal is that, you know, they're getting ranked not being undefeated. And of course, pulling off this huge kind of victory. As Lance Leipold put it, this is the biggest win since he has come to the school. He said he's like, normally I don't do that. I don't like take the most recent game and throw it up that high. But he's like, this is a win that could define, you know, this Kansas program and allow them to build off of it. And so, you know, this is by far, I think, the biggest victory, even over like the first one against Texas. Yeah, exactly. Well, and I said that during the game. This game has Orange Bowl feels. Like it felt like a game where you were going back and forth. You knew you were playing one of those and multiple players, you know, like I had asked them, it was like, you know, these are the kind of games that when you came to Kansas, you were hoping to be able to play in. But at what point did you actually start to expect to play in these games? And multiple ones of them said that first win against Texas on the road back, you know, in year one, they were like, hey, we're going to get there. It's just a matter of when. There was plenty of people, though, that were like, hey, it's, you know, when College Game Day came to town against TCU, that's where the expectation was like, hey, this feels like this what it should be. So this is a program that has gotten a lot better and is where it should be. And I am absolutely looking forward to see what they can do in the next few weeks. So, all right, that is going to go ahead and do it for us today. Unfortunately, we can't talk about the exhibition for the Kansas Jayhawks against the Illinois Illini because that hasn't happened while we're recording. Normally, we record on Mondays, release on Tuesday, but it looks like we're going to start recording on Sundays and releasing on Monday instead. So,
That's my fault. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Honestly, it's probably the way we should have been doing it anyway. So that way people, you know, it's a little bit fresher in people's minds, but I'm not going to complain. This is going to be, I'm looking forward to the results of that one. We can kind of see going into the year. November 6th is the first game. So, you know, we're coming up pretty close on the first official game. So it's going to be a whole lot of fun. You know, we're basically, when this comes out, we'll be a week away. Man, it's hard to believe that we have a absolutely, in the thick of it football team and the number one ranked basketball team in the land right now. It is a hell of a time. Hell of a time to be a Kansas Jayhawk. All right, that is going to do it for us today. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not already, please do go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. No, not Stitcher. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Podcast. Get subscribed so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you can give us a rating and review, 5 stars, nice comments would be absolutely fantastic. But if for whatever reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys, get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We are, of course, part of the 1012 Podcast Network, covering all the teams in the Big 12 Conference. You can find links to all of our great shows by going to 1012network.com. We also have a Patreon that you can support us there. Just go to patreon.com/1012network. We have some great exclusive stuff out over there, so I highly recommend it. But that's going to do it for us today. Make sure you guys visit our sponsors, Charlie Hustle Clothing Company and Prize Picks. You can get some great deals with them. That's going to do it for us. Thank you for joining me, Kyle. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Podcast Network.